From the time I was a young child, I loved the outdoors. My mother and I, we enjoyed gardening together. She instilled that in me, an appreciation for all plants, as they are living things. I knew from a very early age that no matter where I would end up in life, I would always make sure to surround myself with a living, breathing garden filled with flowers, trees, plants, and vegetables. My parents owned and operated a dairy just west of Escalon, and I was there helping out as soon as I was at an age that I was able to, and I loved every minute of it. I was born for this life, and none of it bothered me, this dairy farm life. The mess, the mud, the manure, the smell, none of it bothered me. I just wanted to be there, surrounded by the things and people I loved most in this world. My brother and I, we always had a good time out there on the dairy. We knew exactly how to make our own kind of fun out there. It was a perfect place for us to be raised. Absolutely perfect. But life does not always go the way you think it's supposed to go. Sometimes things just don't work out the way you had planned. Things happen. Life happens. Things go wrong. Maybe you saw them coming, or maybe it was some kind of unseen force. Whatever it was, it intervened. It changed things for me and my family. My parents decided their marriage was no longer a thing they could manage. My brother and I, we were still really young. So looking back upon that time, maybe we didn't quite understand the changes that were going on in our lives. We went from being on the dairy every day to being on the dairy only on weekends. My mom moved us to Modesto, California. And that would be the place that I would call home from then on. If anything good were to come of the breakup of my mom and dad's marriage, it's that it brought me and my brother closer than ever. We were very protective of one another. And the bond we had, the closeness of our relationship, that was something that would never, ever change. My family is everything to me. Besides my family, I had a very close, tight-knit group of friends, some of us having known each other since elementary school, some from junior high, and we stayed close all the way into high school. I went to Downey High School in Modesto. If you were to ask my friends, they'd tell you I was so energetic, fun, perky, chatty, and outgoing. They'd also tell you that I was confident and charming and sincere. Now, they wouldn't be wrong, but I will say this. My friends, my dearest friends, whom I love with all my heart, it is them who brought the best out in me. We bring the best out in each other. I am all of these things because of them. Some of my friends were cheerleaders, including myself. Some in our group of friends played sports. Whatever it was, we did everything together. We attended school activities. We went to football games. We went to the occasional party, sometimes slumber parties. Those were fun. We talk about boys and, full disclosure, we sometimes snuck some champagne after the parents went to sleep. But don't tell my parents that. I will tell you this. No matter what, I never, ever, ever missed school. No matter how tired, no matter how many of my friends didn't make it, I always managed to get myself there. Whatever it was my friends and I were up to, we were almost always together. At least we'd try to be. My friends, we all knew that we would be friends for life. We were going to see each other get married, we would have children, and our kids would have playdates, and we'd grow old together. Of that, I was certain. Well, as they say, all good things must come to an end, and this included our high school years. I graduated with the Downey High School class of 1993. As much as I was sad to say goodbye to my high school days, I was very excited about moving forward onto the next step in my life. I was accepted at Cal Poly State University at San Luis Obispo, and I could not be more thrilled about the opportunity to further my education there. And what do you think I was majoring in? You're right, ornamental horticulture, of course. You have to major in something that you love, and you know how much I love the outdoors, the plants, the flowers, the trees, and the gardens. There wouldn't be anything else in the world I would choose to study. And I don't mean to toot my own horn, but I did receive the Outstanding Freshman Award my first year at the university, in, of course, the Ornamental Horticulture Division. Thank you very much. One of the hardest parts of being at Cal Poly was being kind of far away from my family back in Modesto. After all, it is a 4-hour drive. But it definitely could be a lot worse. It was close enough that we were able to visit when time permitted. Occasionally, my brother would drive down to see me. I always look forward to his visits. I did meet new people, and I was experiencing different things, and I was learning and growing, but there's nothing like family. And when he'd visit, I'd be so excited to show him the things that I'd been able to see. I'd take him to places he'd never been before. It was a whole new world to me, and I loved sharing it with him. We weren't about college keg parties or stuff like that. In this, one of the most beautiful parts of California, you visit vineyards. You go wine tasting. It's practically a requirement. I loved showing my brother this different side of California, and I am so grateful to have been able to share those experiences with him. For some, coming to California's wine country is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And here it was, practically in my own backyard. How could you not want to take all this in? And did I tell you yet about the Pacific Cafe? It's this little place that I discovered because my neighbor worked there, and it's easily become one of my favorite places to go when I want to get away from the campus a little bit and have a good meal and take in a beautiful view of the bay. I love looking at the water. I could sit there all day and stare out over the ocean. Well, the reason I'm telling you about the Pacific Cafe is because the view isn't just amazing on the outside. It was pretty good on the inside too. I spied a really cute waiter who worked there. You know, when you first lay your eyes on someone and you just know, you have that feeling that you just have to get to know that person. I had that feeling with my Pacific Cafe waiter. He was tall and handsome, polite and charming. And as luck would have it, he also went to Cal Poly, and he was single. Now that I think about it, that was more than luck. That was fate. I couldn't help myself. I slipped him my number. Can you believe it? I didn't want to wait for him to make the first move because what if he didn't? I'd miss my chance to ever get to know him. It was definitely one of those now or never moments for me. And I did it. Now, all I could do was wait and see if he'd ever call me. Then the thought came, what if he didn't? Then I would never be able to show my face in the Pacific Cafe again. No way. I guess I just have to find a new favorite spot. before he'd even called, even before we had gone on our first date, I had to let my mom know the news that I literally met the man of my dreams. I was filled with absolute certainty that my waiter was the one. I called her up out of the blue that summer of 1994. She could tell by the exuberance in my voice as soon as she picked up the phone that I was overcome with excitement. I still get excited thinking about sharing that moment with my mom. I said, "Mom, I've met the man I'm gonna marry. You have just got to get down here and meet him." My mom asked me if we had gone out yet. And it may seem silly now, but I was sure as day that he was the one. And I didn't care if she thought I was being impulsive or putting the cart before the horse. This was it. I told her, "No, not yet, but we will." And guess what? He called. He actually called. I was over the moon when he did. But there was good news and there was bad news. Which would you like first? The good or the bad? The good? Okay. The good news was we made plans for our very first date that week. The bad news was on our very first date, he took me deep sea fishing and I got seasick. Can you imagine? On our first date, I was mortified. This was obviously a man who enjoyed being out on the water, and I had to get sick. So here's a tip for all of you out there on the dating scene. Don't go deep sea fishing on a first date unless you're sure you're not gonna ruin the whole thing by falling ill. It might not be the best first impression. Fortunately, my date was so thoughtful and gracious about it. He probably felt as bad as I did, not having taken into consideration that I really hadn't been used to being on the water like that. Thank goodness he understood. I mean, it could have happened to anyone, right? Well, if I wasn't certain when I first laid eyes on him at the Pacific Cafe, it was certain by then. I was deeply in love with this man. He made it pretty clear that the feeling was very, very mutual. Isn't it truly amazing how one fateful meeting at a random cafe, your whole life can change in that single moment? Of course, my mom was interested in what I had to tell her on the phone the previous weekend. I mean, what mom wouldn't be? Your young daughter, who's been away at college for just under a year, calls you out of the blue and tells you that she's met the man she's gonna marry? My mom needed to see this for herself. She drove down to see me the next weekend after the first date. I know this was soon. I know this seems hasty and impetuous. But I was sure that this was what I wanted, and there was no point in wasting time overthinking this. I was thrilled my mom was coming and I couldn't wait for her to meet him. I let him know that we were going to come by the Pacific Cafe when she arrived, just so that he wouldn't be surprised or caught off guard. And do you know what he did? This is just an example of the kind of gentleman that he is. When we arrived at the cafe, he had 2 dozen roses at a table set for my mother and me, a white dozen for my mom, and a red dozen for me. Doesn't that just melt your heart? Was it a thing that he did to just charm my mom? Maybe. It doesn't really matter because she liked him anyway. But the roses certainly did not hurt. My mother knew me, and she knew, even from these very early stages of this new and budding romance, that I was in love. And if I was happy, my mom was happy. And just like I had said 3 years earlier, I was gonna marry this man. I planned our entire wedding. It was kind of my thing. Entertaining was one of my passions, and I wanted to create the perfect evening for us and all of our family and friends. And if you know me, You know, this wedding was going to be outdoors, surrounded by all of the people and things that I love. And do you know the location I chose? Sycamore Mineral Springs Resort. You should look it up. You'd be hard-pressed to find a more lush and wooded hillside anywhere along the coast of California. It all finally came together for us, August 9th, 1997. You can see my wedding pictures too. I dare you to try and find one where I'm not smiling. Do you like the flower arrangements I chose? You almost don't need them with a backdrop so stunning. That was almost the happiest day of my entire life. There would be one more huge thing that I still have to tell you about that was a few more years away. That would definitely eclipse my wedding as the happiest day ever. So, do you think I did things a little bit backwards? Possibly. Did I mention that we tied the knot before college graduation? Yep, we sure did. I suppose that's not that big of a deal. I was almost done with school. I just didn't see any reason to wait. I was ready to get started with my partner in life. This idea came to us while we were finishing up. I mean, we have to think about making a living, right? We're married now, so it's time to put together a plan. And here's what we came up with. Why continue working for someone else, at the Pacific Cafe, I mean, when we can be our own bosses? Take all that experience in food services, put our brains together, and come up with our very own place. And just like that, we were the proud owners of The Shack, a quaint little burgers and beer joint near the college. And this, my friends, was only the first in a lifetime of adventures for us. Never in my wildest dreams did I ever see myself the founder of a restaurant. It was so exciting to have achieved something like this together. But suddenly, we realized that there wasn't much reason for us to stay in San Luis Obispo, other than The Shack. I had my college degree now, and maybe it was time for me to think about starting a career of my own. And remember, I still have some hopes and dreams to chase. And for those, I need my family close to me, not to mention my close friends from high school. Modesto was calling. I needed to go back there. I needed to lay down roots close to home. And my husband, my ever so supportive, ever so loving husband, of course he wanted to be by my side as we made these dreams together come true. We let The Shack go and made our way back to Modesto. Incidentally, I heard that The Shack stayed open for many years after we sold it to its new owners. I don't think it's open any longer, which makes me sad. That was our first baby, so to speak. You'll have to let me know, but I'm pretty sure The Shack is no more. Back in Modesto, I had my first order of business. It was time to get the girls back together. I know. Life gets in the way. We've all gone in different directions. Some of us, like myself, got married. Some of us might be starting families. And I'm not going to try to dilute myself into thinking that things could be like they were in high school. But then again, why not? Why can't we reconnect? Why can't we have girls' nights? Why can't we have sleepovers and gossip and men talk? I wasn't about to let the girls just drift off into their own lives and forget what we had in high school. Married or not, kids or no kids, we were doing this. I didn't take their friendships for granted, and I never allowed them to drift too far from my thoughts. And before long, the girls were back together, and I was going to make sure that we were going to stay that way. So you know when I found out the biggest news of my life in the summer of 2002? That I started calling everybody's phones. I was pregnant. I'm nearly in tears thinking about it right now. My dreams of a family were finally coming true. I shared the news with my family and friends, and they too were overjoyed right along with me. And so was the love of my life, my husband, and now soon to be dad. As soon as I could, I found out I was having a boy. And when I did, I went into full-blown baby prep mode. We all know how much my husband loves the water, and how much he loves boats, and how much he loves fishing. And because I tend not to fare very well on water, as a small gesture to him and to the loves that he has that I can't always share with him, I decided to give our baby's room a nautical theme. Isn't that the perfect idea? I painted the walls this incredibly vibrant periwinkle shade of blue that reminded me so much of the ocean. And the rest of the room easily fell into place from there. We got the crib set up, the changing table, the dresser, and of course a gliding chair for mom and dad to rock baby to sleep. I found this adorable little lamp with lighthouses painted on the shade. How cute is that? And I found this mobile that had a boat captain in the middle with a bunch of sailboats that circle around him as it spins and plays lullabies. Oh, and get this. I found a mirror that's shaped like a porthole. I hung some fish and starfish on the walls. But listen to this. The finishing touch. And I'd have to say, my favorite thing in the entire room. I found a lifesaver and hung it on the wall that says, "Welcome aboard," inscribed on it. Do you want to see pictures? I can show you if you like. It's not quite finished yet, but I still have some time left. My little guy isn't due until February 10th, 2003. Oh, and did I tell you? We decided on a name. Connor. Baby Connor. My belly was growing so fast as the holidays were coming. I've been kind of winging it on my own lately, though. I know there's a great deal of pressure on my husband to prepare for Connor's arrival. He's been working so many extra hours lately, I feel like I never see him. But I'm trying not to let this get to me because I know in my heart and in my soul that everything he does for me, for us. I have to remember that if I'm ever feeling lonely. I say to myself, self, big picture. Remember the big picture. It will all be worth it in just a few short weeks. And it will no longer be just the two of us. We will be three. But I have to admit, it is hard to not get disappointed sometimes, especially at some of the important things that get put on the back burner. Remember that Christmas party I went to? My goodness, there's a picture of me sitting in a chair, big old pregnant belly right there front and center. I found the best outfit I could for the thing, and that was as good as it was gonna get, being almost 8 months pregnant. I attended that party alone. My date had to meet with his boss at the San Francisco airport that night. Disappointed? Yeah. Disappointed again. I just kept reminding myself of the big picture. He'd be here for me, if he could. And my mom, my lovely mom, she kind of sensed that I really wasn't myself when she came to visit me. Let me think back. It was about 10 days before Christmas. I had to show her Connor's nursery, and of course she loved it. We sat and talked. My mom rubbed my belly. Connor's grandma rubbed my belly, hoping to coerce him into kicking, but he was being stubborn that evening. Isn't there nothing else like it in the world? That little life inside your body moving around. Ah, but He wouldn't budge. Nana didn't get to feel you kick baby Connor. I did have something that I needed to tell my mom. Something that I was keeping to myself because I really didn't know what to do with it. I confided in my mom that Connor's dad had no interest in touching my stomach. And he was adamant. He did not want to feel Connor kicking. I know my mom could see the hurt in my eyes. I know I couldn't hide my feelings from her. She could see my sadness. She could feel my sadness. What could she have done to make any of this any easier on me? The only thing she could do, she comforted me. Baby Connor was fast asleep inside there, but my mom rested her head on my belly and said to him, "Hello, little Connor. This is your Nana talking to you. I love you, and I can't wait to meet you." My mom always brings me so much of what I need. What would I do without her? And Connor, my precious baby Connor, I couldn't wait to meet you too. Connor was growing at quite the rapid pace. Christmas was getting closer, and I was doing the best that I could to get ready for the holidays. This was going to be our very last Christmas as a family of two. Can you even begin to imagine the excitement I had looking forward to the new year and the arrival of our baby Connor? I bet you can. He's due on the 10th of February, but how amazing would that be if he kept up his little stubborn streak and became my little baby Valentine? I was getting the house ready for Christmas Day. You know, big old pregnant me. But sometimes, when you least expect it, everything can change in the blink of an eye. That happened to me. And it's kind of hard for me to talk about because I can't be sure what exactly it was that caused everything in my world to come to such an abrupt end. Maybe you can help me figure it out. Does that sound crazy? It feels like a puzzle in my head, but I'm missing a bunch of the pieces. I'm trying to make sense of it, but I can't seem to be able to. One minute I was waddling around the house, making some last-minute Christmas preparations, and the next, I felt lost. Like, I didn't know where I was or what was happening to me. Have you ever had that feeling? It's hard to explain unless you've been there. But I guess if you've been there, you wouldn't ever be able to tell anyone about it, would you? Probably not. Because you know, and I know, that my life ended that Christmas Eve of 2002. And so did the life of my unborn baby, my little Connor. I so badly wanted to see you and hold you in the life we were taken from, and I never did. We were so excited about you, especially your Nana. She was over the moon. Oh, your Nana, my mom, my poor mom. When this news reaches her, I can't bear to think of the sadness that's going to overwhelm her. And my family, my friends, I just know that they're going to be so filled with fear and dread because they don't know where I am. I don't know where I am. What can I do to fix this? I don't want them to be afraid, but I can't help them. I can't reach out to them. And I'm never gonna be able to because I'm gone. I can't tell you what happened to me because I don't have the answer to that question. One person knows what happened to me. Is that something that you've heard? You don't even know where I'm at yet, much less what's happened to me. Don't worry though. I'm doing everything I can to make sure that we are found, but that's gonna have to take some time. I don't like that you have to wait. I don't like that you have no answers. I don't like that you're worried and afraid. You're wondering if I'm injured or if I'm hurting in some way. Are all those terrible thoughts running through your mind as you contemplate my disappearance? Is someone holding me captive somewhere? What in the world would anyone want to have to do with a very, very pregnant woman? I'd be the first to tell anyone who would listen that at this point in my pregnancy, I'm not very efficient or useful for much of anything. Even though you don't know it now, sometime down the road, you will come to understand that whatever hurt or pain I experienced, it was fleeting. Peace and serenity came very quickly to me and Connor. We had each other. Did you hear a rumor about a burglary across the street from my house? My neighbor had gone out of town on Christmas Eve morning and didn't return until December 26. They took guns and expensive jewelry and a safe. Another one of my neighbors thinks that she saw some suspicious men across the street from my house loading stuff into their van. So the burglary wasn't just a rumor. My neighbor's house was broken into, but the idea had been floated that perhaps I saw something untoward going on across the street and confronted these supposed robbers. Does that sound like something I would do? Something 8-month pregnant me would do? Probably not. If I saw suspicious activity at my neighbor's house that morning, I certainly wouldn't march over there like the neighborhood watch and demand that they put a stop to their activities. What's more likely, I'd probably call 911 and report what I was seeing. I don't think I have to tell you that I didn't see any burglary that morning. I wasn't doing anything at all anymore when that day started. And I can't be sure, but knowing how my story ends, I doubt I was ever going to do anything ever again after the sun rose on that Christmas Eve morning. My neighbor also said that she didn't see anything suspicious happening at my house either. Well, that's not really a surprise if you ask me. It's just the two of us and our dog Mackenzie. Did I ever tell you about Mackenzie? I don't think I've mentioned her yet. She's our beautiful golden retriever. And I'm so grateful for my thoughtful neighbor who found her wandering the neighborhood Christmas Eve morning and returned her to my yard. Isn't that strange? Why was my Mackenzie wandering around loose? And she had her leash on, and it was covered in mud. My poor dog. She must have been scared and confused. But that still doesn't answer the question. How did she get out, and who put her leash on her? Because now, none of us can be sure with 100% certainty, but I don't think I put that leash on Mackenzie that morning. But do you think I did? Baby Connor had me worn down, and I wasn't exactly keeping up with the exercise and the dog walking like I probably should have. All of my friends know that I was kind of having a hard time and not being able to keep up with the things that I wanted to get done around the house for the holidays. I did get winded and tired very quickly. I'd have to stop and take a seat every other minute. You know I love my baby Connor, but he was taking a toll on my body and my energy. Although he was absolutely worth it, of course. And having said that, even though it may not be clear to you nor I, it is with a great deal of certainty that If I had to guess, I'd say no. I wasn't in any kind of shape to be feeling like walking. Not that morning. I knew I had too many Christmas things I needed to take care of. And what about those neighbors who said they saw me walking Mackenzie that morning? What do you suppose the implication of that is? Are we thinking that somebody snatched me while I was walking Mackenzie? Again, I go back to what would anyone want with an 8 months pregnant woman? Besides, if some bad guy was looking to kidnap someone, would they really choose someone walking a big dog? I tend to think not. And I might be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure that they've identified the pregnant woman who also happens to have a golden retriever walking her dog in the neighborhood that day. So don't you think it's safe to say by now that I wasn't on a walk with my dog the morning of Christmas Eve? I know you had no idea where I was at the time, but if it gives you any measure of solace, I will tell you this. I won't stay hidden forever. The worst part of all of this is my parents' suffering. Their pain is palpable, simply unbearable. I want to reach out to them, and I would if I could. But where I am, what's been done to me makes that impossible. My heart shatters into a million pieces for them. I want to assure them that they will find me. I want to tell them that I know I'm lost and I know you're desperate to find me, but I'm not scared anymore. I'm not hurting anymore. And I'm with my baby Connor, and we have one another. I was afraid for a moment, but that faded, seemingly in a split second. And like I said, it's hard to describe. I suppose because it's actually impossible to describe. That moment, you leave your life. I don't know when that moment happened for me and for baby Connor. I feel like I know, but I don't. Nobody knows really, except for one person. And I don't think the truth will ever be revealed. I guess it's not that important to know how or why. What difference would it make? Knowing those answers won't bring Connor and me back to life, will it? No, the truth certainly won't do that. I can't even begin to tell you how much sorrow I'm filled with to see my family and friends preparing to search for me at Christmas time, rather than being able to enjoy the holidays like they so deserve to do. Nobody wants to spend Christmas making and printing missing persons flyers. They should be at home with their families and loved ones, not out scouring the land, setting up command centers. I wish I could tell them where to look for us. Then they'd all be able to go home. But I know that they know I do the same for them, every single one of them, if it were me. I know they're searching in places. Places I know that they're not going to find me. But what are they supposed to do when no one is able or willing to point them in the right direction? They're putting so much effort into finding me, it's overwhelming. They're searching thousands and thousands of wetlands near where I lived. I mean, it makes sense that I should be close to home, doesn't it? After all, I'm pregnant, and I didn't take my car with me. Did you hear that tracking dogs traced my scent? Aren't tracking dogs amazing creatures? You see, they actually kind of proved what I said earlier. Knowing me and the shape that I was in and the way I was feeling, I wasn't about to take the dog for a walk. Those dogs didn't track me in the direction of the park where I would have gone to walk Mackenzie. They tracked me in another direction. And you know, Investigators drew the conclusion that I did not walk away from my home. I was driven away. That makes sense, doesn't it? I couldn't tell you for sure because I was no longer aware of anything that was going on around me. You probably know as much as I do. And even that's pretty limited. Maybe if the person who drove me and Connor away from our home forever would speak up, we'd have some answers. Do you know who that person might have been? Because I truly have no idea who could have done this to us. I do have a feeling, though, once I'm able to reveal myself and Connor to you, that the person who had a hand in doing this will come to light. I hope that will bring my family and friends some kind of closure. I hate seeing them pained like this, especially my mom and dad. So I heard all of you attended a vigil for Connor and me at the park. I can hardly believe that more than 1,000 people turned out for that. On New Year's Eve, no less. No holidays are going to stand in the way of your searching for me, are they? Thank you. Thank you so very much for coming together for us. I know how important it is for the community to lend its love and support to my family. I'm grateful that they have all of you to lean on and cry with. I would so love to be there with you, right along with you, so we wouldn't have to be there for a vigil, but rather a celebration. Those are the happy things I want to be remembered for, making my world and the world around me a fun and happy place to be. Connor would have completed my world. He would have loved it, and he would have been so loved. Isn't that the most profound tragedy of all? That baby Connor never made it into his life on Earth. I know you guys searched for Connor and me a couple of days after the vigil. I knew you were there and you were so close, so painfully close. It just wasn't time yet. Something keeps holding me back from reaching you. What I can't seem to understand is why you keep coming back to the same places looking for me. Did someone make you think that we were somewhere in the water? I don't think it's a coincidence that you keep returning again and again. You must know something. Otherwise, you wouldn't keep coming back here for us. Well, at least I know you're close. But you're looking in the wrong places. And I suppose I could be anywhere. This place is enormous. But I know you keep coming back to us, and so close. I hope you have the strength and perseverance to keep trying. Do you think everyone could do that? For my mom and my dad, my family and my friends? I can't bear the thought of the anguish and the torment they're feeling because they don't know where to find us. We are hidden, yes. Very, very well hidden. And I don't even know how we're here. How did Connor and I end up in this place where nobody can find us? Do you have any idea? Because I sure don't. And I'd like to know. I'd like to know why someone didn't want Connor and me in this world any longer. Anyway, there's no time to ponder that right now. Please keep looking for us. Don't give up. We're waiting to go home. Did you hear that someone broke into our home? It's been more than a month since I've been home. I thought we were living in a decent neighborhood, but for some reason this keeps happening. I wonder what they're looking for. Could it have been the same people who broke into my neighbor's house last Christmas Eve? wonder if our home was targeted. I guess it's a good thing nobody was home when the burglary happened. I used to always feel a strong sense of safety and security in my home. You just never know who or what is out there looking to hurt you or your family. The day baby Connor was due to come into this world came and went. I know my family and loved ones are holding out hope that maybe he or I will surface somewhere in seek of medical attention. They hope that I'm bringing him into this world and somehow, some way, at some place, he and I are being cared for. That's the way my story should have gone. I should have given birth to my son February 10th. Mommy and baby should be in a hospital room recovering nicely. We ought to be surrounded by our loved ones, eager to meet the newest member of the family. We should be getting ready to arrive at home and show baby Connor the nursery, waiting just for him. But that won't ever happen. Instead, we're trapped in this cold, dark, watery place. And my family, I wouldn't be able to shield them from this sadness if they were to know the truth. The truth that baby Connor would never have a single birthday. I get angry sometimes when I think about how we were robbed of all of that. Especially Connor. He lost out more than all of us. There's no need to check out any hospitals anymore. You're not gonna find us there. Do you know why the police have been at my house for 3 days? What is that all about? Do you know what they could possibly be looking for? We are not at the house, so I'm not sure how spending that many days there is helping lead them to us. I know they have an idea that we are close to the bay. They keep coming here. So, why spend all that time at my home? And why are they taking all those bags of my belongings anyway? Aren't those my personal things? Our personal things? I know I'm never coming home, but I also don't want to see my things or my family's things be taken away. I already know that my family is never going to see me again, and they are never going to get to see baby Connor at all. So I want to somehow make sure that they have the chance to keep anything of mine and Connor's that they would like to have to remember us by. What? My family has my car? My Land Rover? I thought the police took it to try and find some clues as to where I might have gone. But they brought it back home, didn't they? What do you mean it was traded in at a car dealership? And the dealer gave it back to my family? Why would my car be sold like that? Nobody knows where I am, right? I mean, I know I'm not coming back, but nobody else really knows that for sure, do they? This doesn't make any sense. Unless... No. I'm not even gonna go there. This must be some sort of misunderstanding. I'm sure my family will get to the bottom of this for me and for Connor. I was planning on bringing him home in that car. I do want to tell you how grateful and overwhelmed I am with the love and support that the community has given to my family and loved ones as they keep pushing forward in their efforts to find us. Did you know my tip line has received thousands and thousands of calls? Isn't that interesting? How many thousands of pieces of information could there be out there if, when all is said and done, Connor and I are nowhere but in one hidden location? I don't like the thought of resources being wasted and hopes being raised because 100 people think they saw me walking down the street somewhere. It's not me. I'm not wandering around aimlessly. I'm not hiding in plain sight. I'm not living off the grid. I've not run off to a foreign country or a deserted island. I've not joined or been sacrificed by some clandestine entity or cult. And I assure you, I did not walk away from my family and my life of my own volition. Someone did this to me. Someone made me vanish. I wouldn't hurt my family like this. Can you see their pain? I would not do that. And don't worry, you're getting ever so close to knowing. So my case, is that what Connor and I have amounted to? A case? I guess so. We're just a case number now, officially anyway. So my case has been reclassified from a missing persons to a homicide. Isn't that weird to say out loud? Connor and me, homicide victims? Well, I knew it all along. I guess it's just different when it becomes official. Does that mean my family has given up hope? At least on hopes of finding me and Connor alive? I don't think labeling us as murder victims as opposed to missing persons is ever going to stop them from looking for me. I do want everyone to be able to know how and where to best focus their energy. So maybe this is a good thing, right? Like I said earlier, I'm not purposely keeping myself hidden from them. We are where they think we are. You know that place they keep coming back to? The bay? It's such a huge body of water. When they stand on the edge of the bay and look out over the water that seemingly goes on forever, they're probably feeling as though they're never going to be able to find us. I wish I could tell them that nothing is impossible. Time is up. Connor and I, we could no longer go on staying hidden in the freezing cold dark where we've been for much too much time. I need to see the pain and suffering of my family come to an end. They've struggled far too long. I've been gone for 4 months. They've seen baby Connor's due date come and go. Every day the sun rises and sets, it brings no answers for them. I know they keep strong and they keep going for us. Because they know if it were me and something happened to one of my loved ones, I would never give up either. And I just can't let this go on anymore. Of course, I had no choice in any of this. I didn't ask to be spirited away from my life, but I was. Am I angry about this? Yes, of course I am. Everything I ever wanted, especially my little baby boy, was taken away in a violent moment. I'm also angry for all the pain that this is causing my family. How can I make this easier for them? What can I do to stop all of this suffering? How can I bring my loved ones the peace I want them to so badly have? The only thing I can do, bring what's happened to Connor and me out of the darkness and into the sunlight. And once I do that, I'll be able to bring with me the truth. The truth is long overdue, isn't it? I think it is. And once we emerge from the depths in which we were trapped, then maybe someone will be able to gaze upon us and discover the story of our fate. Once our story can finally be told, we can turn our sights away from searching for us to searching for who did this to us. And I don't think you're going to have to look far. But that's really not my story to tell. Time's up. We've been found. Now it's time for us to go home.